All right, welcome to this special edition of the IntequiTrust podcast, all about the massive, massive news about Dell about to chew down on EMC. So there's myself, Nigel, there's Gabriel, and there's Mark. Gentlemen.
Hey.
Hello. Hello.
So we did say right before we started recording, right, we need to have like this huge old disclaimer right at the very top here. This is true of every show we do probably, right? But especially so for this time. Every single thing we say here is pure speculation by three guys who have hardly got a clue between the three of them about it. Would you agree, or am I being overly harsh?
Oh, yeah. Everything I learned about this deal, I learned at 4:25 a.m. when I woke up and went and started reading.
That's more than me. You've been at it for 8 hours now.
Well, yeah, you know, in L.A. So I've been in the car for 4 hours and 10 minutes today because I had to drive up to L.A. And that means that basically for, you know, I've been able to consume a vast amount of knowledge while I sit in 5 to 10 mile per hour traffic. So I didn't ram anybody. A motorcycle almost did clip me, though, because he wasn't paying attention. He was reading on his phone instead of me.
About the same deal, no doubt.
Oh, my gosh. Probably. I know. You know, it's such a big news. I mean, I'm on the West Coast, so most big news hits me way later, right? So I get up at, you know, it's already 3 hours into the day in the East. And I don't know why I woke up, but I just did. I woke up especially early and then just picked up the phone, started reading, and I'm like, OMG, this is really happening. And people are flipping out.
It's even quite big news over here in the UK as well. So my wife came home today from doing the school run, and she's like reading to me from the Sky News website about Dell buying EMC, and we're having this conversation about it. And she's like talking to me as if I'm some kind of expert, you know. Oh, so what's this going to mean? And I'm like, and you know what? When I'm talking to her, I can come off as a bit of an expert. But now that I'm recording the podcast and, you know, people who actually know stuff might be listening, I'm a little bit nervous. But you know what? So this is a huge deal, right? And it's so complicated. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of the details are still a little bit unknown, right? So let me just try and give a quick summary, and then you guys can just totally correct me on the stuff that I get wrong, right? So Dell are looking to buy EMC. And I should probably caveat this with, if approved by the regulators, because this will be the single largest ever technology merger stroke acquisition, right? And the numbers that are being thrown out there, right? I mean, the big number is $67 billion.
Actually, I think Time Warner and AOL were bigger.
Yeah, and then there was what? Wasn't there a merge Comcast and Time Warner as well was on the, that was like $150 billion or some ungodly amount of money, but I wouldn't call that necessarily a technology a merger, more of a teleco.
Yeah. So within the systems business, I guess.
Within the systems business, this is the biggest ever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This dwarfs, you know, silly things like WhatsApp and Instagram. Yet, you know, something like Instagram was what, $13 billion and they only had like 25 employees.
Yeah, I was going to say it dwarfs them, you know, potentially cash-wise, but as in the number of people employment-wise that are affected here as well. And you know what? We'll come to that in a bit.
Yeah, this is a much bigger deal in many respects.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Instagram was funny money. This is debt.
The D in Dell stands for debt.
Yeah.
Debt L. There's a silent H there, I believe.
Now,
poor Mike.
The thing is, right, I've really been of the opinion recently that since Dell went private, I just didn't think they had any cash. So I was thinking any kind of acquisitions that they would be able to make would be like tiny acquisitions. Now, I know they've not reached necessarily into their own pockets to put real cash on the table for most of this $67 billion here. So go on, where's the money come from, or where's it going to come from?
It comes from our friends at Silver Lake Craftwork.
Silver Lake Partners, and also Michael Dell's private stuff and some other group of investors from Singapore, I believe.
But these guys surely don't have that kind of money on the table, right? They must have then got loans from banks.
If you look at the list of banks that are involved here, it is pretty substantial. I mean, it's pretty much all of them involved, right?
Yeah, JP Morgan, and big.
Here and there. I mean, I'm trying to remember the list.
Oh, it's Goldman's, it's Barclays, it's the who's who of the big boys in banking, right?
It's all the big, it's too big to fail guys.
Oh, said it.
Well, yeah, we think that's what we think, but you know, everybody, all the big banks are hung out here on this deal with debt to this thing. It's going to be very interesting. They're all kind of floating each other, and you know, I'm sure they're all giddy with themselves today. You know, who knows what they're going to be saying 3-4 years from now.
Oh, I know. So if this was to go tits up, right, and you know what, I'm sure it's not, okay, but if it was, could we be in a serious situation here? Could a lot of, you know, could this have like ripples across the industry?
Only if the federal government decides it wants to, you know, make sure that Dell's failure does not impact the larger overall economy. Look at what they did for, you know, General Motors, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know if Dell has that kind of impact. I mean, look at it, though. I mean, you know, $27 billion a year in PC, just PC side, right? Their server side is only $8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else is kind of like, you know, bits and pieces. And then you look at – there's a great infographic out there about the breakup. I thought it was in like Barron's or Forbes or something like that, that shows the different valuations for the different pieces. And, you know, VMware being significant, EMC proper being significant, RSA and Pivotal not so big. And you know, I guarantee, you know, there's going to be some shuffling around there. I think the one thing that I think will happen within 90 days to 120 of this deal going down is Pivotal either goes public or moves out. Because I just don't know if that group and that particular marketplace of ideas is suitable or conducive to the way even EMC was doing business, let alone this new super conglomerate.
Yeah, that's the thing I read on this, is that Pivotal is going to be spun out as a public company.
Right. How much will
and
that
then, and, then the, yes, and then the estimates, and then the estimates for what Pivotal was going to be able to sell, I thought were outrageous.
Yeah, I thought they were a little high, given that they were about a $230 million company.
Yeah, and I think that infographic that you refer to, if it's the same one that I've seen, has Pivotal valued at like way less than $1 billion. I thought it was, at least.
Yeah, that's the one. And who knows? I mean, it's like, I think a lot of this stuff is shots in the dark and kind of guesstimation and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, Brian Gracie wrote a really good article in Wikibon that kind of watched the 10 things to watch to look for. And it lays out the entire, I mean, it's just an amazing amount of information in there. And it was really well written. I wish I put that in the show notes, because it really kind of lays out a lot of the rumor and speculation pieces into like really kind of digestible chunks that you kind of walk through. And it is fairly substantial, you know. It's an amazingly complex deal, and we're starting to, you know, everybody's learning what, you know, a stop hold or whatever it is, or, you know, like, what's the name of the stock that they're calling it now? It's like
tracking
a
stock.
It's a tracking stock. I never heard of a tracking stock before, and I think there's a lot of people in the tech industry probably never heard of what a tracking stock is, or you have to go back to the dot-com days.
VMware's always been a tracking stock.
Okay. Then, yeah. That's why I don't invest money. I have someone do it for me.
Yep. Yeah. You know, on the numbers, right? So I read that Dell already has $12 billion in debt, and it needs to raise another $45 billion to finance this deal. I mean, okay, so I don't understand how Dell or how people think that Dell are able to raise that kind of money, considering the fact that they're a privately owned company and there's
Yeah, and I don't understand how Dell says they're promising that they're going to have an 18 to 24 month deleveraging. So, i.e., that's the time frame that they have to pay, or they're saying that they can pay down the debt.
Not all of it, though, right?
No, there's no way.
That's was in the Gracely article.
So what I've
got that's
here.
Wrong. That has to be wrong, because there's no way you can take on $45 billion.
No,
right? I'm sorry, no way.
Here's what he states: is how do companies manage a cash cow like this, right? So they can either create longer production cycles, increase maintenance support costs, cut salaries, narrow R&D focus, charge a premium. This is likely the playbook for VMAX, VNX, Datamain, Compellent, etc. I mean, I think that, you know, if you could, and obviously we know that there's going to be a layoffs coming at some point down the road. I mean, you know, that's if the deal actually closes. I mean, obviously, there's a very slim to none chance that this doesn't work. But, you know, in the next 60 days, we'll find out for sure.
So what I think is funny is that, you know, there's like, well, somebody else could outbid us for this, right? You know, it's just like 60 days for somebody else to come in. Like, okay, Meg, you know, you're going to come in here and do this? Okay, Larry, you're going to come in here and do this?
Did you see what Meg said today? Is that servicing the debt for this deal alone is $2.5 billion a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's like, neither Larry Ellison or Meg Whitman want to go anywhere near this thing, right? And I think you have to ask the question. I mean, if you frame it like that, who else would go near this thing? And the answer is nobody. Then you have to look at this and say, why is this then a good deal? And I think the answer you come up with is, this is a pretty black deal. This is, I mean, black by bad.
Yeah.
I mean, this is totally red. This is so red, it's black.
But no, I mean, I mean, let's look at it from the opposite side, right? So neither Dell nor EMC was really, you know, they're large organizations. They have very large integration points with, you know, the IT space as a whole. Dell really never had a strong storage play with either Compel or Equalogic because both of those platforms are very long in the tooth. So they really, you know, outside of when they broke off their relationship with EMC and tried to go into the storage market kind of half-ass, because they lost the battle with HP for 3PAR, which would be probably a better move.
But Gabriel, what are you going that this is like a good storage deal? This would be like the worst storage deal ever.
But the thing is, I mean, there's, you know, you're going to have this massive penetration into the market because it was what's Cisco's answer to this? Do they buy NetApp and now they're going to go? It's going to them, Oracle. It's going to be Oracle, Dell EMC and Cisco and HP. You're going to have four giants vying for the, you know, whatever $2 trillion worth of IT spend there is globally.
I tell you what, I think if you're Cisco, you just watch these guys, flail around in quicksand. I think that's what you do if you're Cisco.
Well, I mean, you're going to have 12 to 24, you know, you're going to have at least 24 months of integration and, you know, cohabitating. And then you have, think about this. Think about all the offices in areas where EMC and Dell have a building that are like 2 miles apart, and all the assets and all the, you know, the interweaving of the sales teams and the changing in channel strategic engagement. And now you have Dell partners and EMC partners. I mean, it's a nightmare from just a standpoint of integrating two companies of that size.
Well, that's my point, right? If you're anybody else in this industry and you're looking at it, one, do I need to compete with this? I think the answer is what's there to compete with yet? And do I want to partner with it? What's there to partner with? This raises far more questions than it provides answers. I mean, this was, you know, you look at this and from any way and you look at this is lunacy. This is just lunacy.
But what was the alternative, I guess? I mean, if you put yourself in Joe Tucci's hand, you know,
I don't know. It seems to me that Dell had alternatives here. They didn't have to like get out the big shovels and dig themselves down another, 100 feet in the cold earth.
But, you know, it's like, all right, so if I'm EMC and I need to have some kind of exit strategy or some change, you know, somebody we know, and I can't say who it is like, pick the way you want to die. So it was kind of like, all right, yeah, you can go with Dell or you can kind of see whatever Elliot comes up with and breaks you apart and you have no control over your destiny. And I think they, you know, being what it is and the powers that be at EMC said, you know what, at least we get to make this particular choice and somebody's not making it for us. So obviously
they're going to hand it over to have Michael Dell run it. Unbelievable. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it just seems like lunacy, really.
You know what? Isn't it like totally against the trend at the moment as well? I mean, if you look at IBM, and you could arguably say that Dell plus EMC makes Dell start to look a bit like the old IBM before they started shedding all of their hardware assets and the likes.
Before they realized that cloud was where all the money's at?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why would you want to build this massive systems company?
What a great question.
That's all you know.
How much cloud is in this? Zero. There is zero effing cloud in this deal, and that's where this industry is going.
There's a little bit of cloud. There's the tiniest bit. But you know what? I think it was either Tucci or Michael Dell was in there saying that it's positioning them better to tackle the cloud. And I was like I practically scratched a bald spot in my head there. I was like, what?
But that picture but on
you
the
know
show
what? I mean,
still.
It's. I've never ran a company, and I've never especially run this size. I mean, I would think that these people have sat down and thought through some of this. I don't think this was like a knee-jerk decision. It's probably been in the works for, you know, 12 months. And I think that, you know, large companies of that size, you know, put it this way, I'm sure EMC and NetApp have a chat once a month. And I'm sure that, Cisco and NetApp have a chat once a month about the potential. And they probably did the same thing with EMC, and they probably did the same thing with every other storage player in the market. And I just think that there's always these discussions going on what that looks like. There are entire teams dedicated to mergers and acquisitions and the valuations and what the upsides and downsides are to it. It'll be very interesting, I think. You know, I think we'll all be basically saying, you know, who do we watch to see how they respond? How does Cisco respond to this, right? Because they're losing an OSM, an original storage manufacturer that they had a tight partnership with around VBlock, and everybody says, oh, nothing about that's going to change. Yeah, right. And then they had a lot of MDS fiber channel switch engagement that they sold a lot of. Does that change? Does it go away completely? And then the biggest question about all of this, and the best graphic I saw today was Cloud Opinion on Twitter. It was a guy leading a horse in a cart, and in the back it said EMC/Dell, and in the very front the guy was labeled VMware, right? Because that's the cherry in this. That's what everybody wants. No, they don't give a honestly. I don't think that they care about the EMC storage portfolio. They want VMware because it's profitable and it's high margin, and it's and then you see how they broke it out in the is the tracking stock with inside there 80% management or ownership of VMware. Where does that leave HP? Where does that leave Cisco? Where does that leave Supermicro? Where does it leave every other manufacturer out there when EMC was, VMware was tied to a Nutanix, storage?
Nutanix, SimpliVity, yeah. Everything around just, HCI, right? What is what happens with all
who
that?
Who just got the big, who just got, basically had to go out and buy, an industrial-sized bucket of KY jelly today because they just got the shaft? I mean, the entire HCI market just lost a massive partner that everybody was jumping at the bit to, SimpliVity OEMs, the Dell server.
Not to mention the rest of the industry, right? So,
right.
Your company, Gabriel, SolidFire, yeah. My company, Tejile, right? Everybody else that's out there, Nimble, NetApp,
right.
You name it. We're all out there. We all, depend in some way or another to partnering with VMware. What happens with that now, right?
Right. Not even just VMware. I mean, think about all of us losing a partner in a server store, a server manufacturer like Dell. Right. I mean, what happens to every reference architecture every one of those companies just listed, had put together? Well, now they kind of all get devalued and kind of worthless. So now we all have to scramble and look at somebody else.
It's going to take 3 years for Dell and EMC to figure out how to make their sales organizations work together. I mean, you talk about layoffs. There's going to be massive layoffs. There's going to be huge infighting inside there. I was with Equalogic when Dell bought Equalogic. So maybe Dell learned something from that. But it was very, very difficult. It took a long time to get people doing different things. What's going to change this behavior short term to make this work? I mean, you talk about this kind of debt. These guys really have to execute. And it's not clear to me that this kind of deal, this size of deal, is going to allow them to execute, right? They're going to have to cut. They're going to have to figure out how to merge. They're going to have to move really fast. And at the end of the day, are they going to be able to increase their business enough to be able to deal with the debt? To me, that's the deal about this, right? You can talk about the other industry players. You can talk about the partnerships. And there's going to be some loss in there. There's going to be business angst that causes people, partners, to go and do other things. And okay, all of that, but man, they have to figure out how to sell a lot more to service their debt. And at the same time, they're going to be trying to dig out from underneath this mess. I just don't see it.
But also them being private allows them to do a lot of things that they would not be able to do when they're public.
Like
there's
what?
There's that aspect. I mean, just because you're in control of your own destiny, you're not beholden to the street.
No, I get
you're
that.
Beholden to your investors.
Yes, and but you're beholden to a massive debt in this particular situation.
The thing is, money's cheap. Money is cheap right now.
I don't know that $50 billion or whatever it is that they have to make up is cheap. Meg may be overestimating. Let's say they're servicing the debt is $2 billion a year. Well, that sucks.
Sure, you've increased your market share potential vastly by bringing this portfolio and this customer base on board. And if you can get it right, the merger of those two organizations.
But that takes time.
It does, but this is not a short-term play. This is not something that you do to get a return on in 12 months or 14 months.
They need to start servicing this debt, though, fairly soon.
Eventually, yeah. Well, there's going to be clauses in there. It's kind of like – it's not like, when you lease a car – you're going to you get 6 months lead time before you have to start paying. I mean, I think we're all getting, a lot of people are getting really caught up in the money aspect of this because it's the one thing that we can't quite wrap our heads around, but none of us have a background in how these mergers work and how money lending works and all these types of things. What we do know from the technology side is that it's going to be tough to integrate these two companies. And, for everybody, I mean, for me, the way we're approaching it, or at least I'm speaking on my behalf here, is it's business as usual. I mean, we're going to go out and continue to do things. It's actually a really great opportunity for a lot of other companies in the industry to you know, step up and say, hey, look at us. Take a look at us real quick while this chaos is happening right now and this uncertainty, you know, and maybe that's a little bit of FUD, but, you know, it's like.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's not FUD.
Take a look at us. And it's like.
It is not FUD. It is not FUD.
There's jobs available out there. There's going to be.
Both these companies sell on FUD, and now everybody else in the industry is going to be able to sell against them on FUD, right? You know, I know I work for Tegile, and when we sell against Dell, you know, their defense against us is they're a young company. You know, they haven't been around. How long have we been around? EMC, same thing, right? And everybody, you run into that more than we do because you sell bigger systems than we do. It's all around FUD, right? Well, now every time, you know, it doesn't matter if it's you guys, us guys, you know, NetApp, Nimble, you know, you name it, Pure, you know, it's like, we're going to be able to throw FUD at them, and it's going to be real FUD, you know?
Jaden Frode.
You can't throw FUD at us anymore because you guys are buried under all this debt.
Hey, can I just wind it back a bit? Because you were talking about the HCI industry and a bunch of different companies losing a partner in VMware here. And I'm not quite sure that I followed you there because I don't see that.
I don't think they're going to lose a partner, but what they're going to lose is access. So let's say I'm Nutanix and I have this OEM agreement with Dell. Now, I just bought VMware and vSAN and EvoRail and a bunch of other stuff that's under the table. I'm going to make a whole lot more money selling that product because I own the whole stack than I am OEM and selling a Nutanix stack, right? And the same thing, you know, I mean, obviously anybody who OEMs, I mean, Dell has this great OEM arm, right? I mean, if you're a software play and you want to go to market with an appliance, they're a great company to partner with because they do really nice things around their OEM arm. And, you know, we use Dell servers, Simplivity uses Dell servers, a lot of people that use a Dell server as their platform, right? Those things don't just change overnight because this deal goes down. You know, those are contracts. They take time and they, you know, it's like, but the guys who are a pure software aspect or a pure software play, unless there was a time frame attached to that contract, they could be cut off tomorrow.
Yeah, right? So whoever is selling, you know, Nutanix at Dell, right, is now, you know, at some point in the next 9 months is going to be getting heavy pressure to sell VMware.
To sell something, or they don't even get heavy pressure. The thing is, hey, guess what? What would you like to be comped on? Just selling a software piece or the software and the server and everything else.
It's not heavy pressure. It's sales. Yeah.
They'll structure the comp plan so that, you know, the benefit is to sell that. And then who suffers? Well, you know, now we're not selling the right solution to the customer. We're selling the right solution that pays us. And that's a challenge that all kinds of companies have.
Cool. Okay. So speaking about partnerships and things like that as well, then what's the potential impact here between VMware and HP as well, because obviously Dell and HP, huge, huge rivals, yeah? HP, I think, is still the biggest reseller of VMware, right? What goes down there?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I remember the last number I heard was
that HP will be trying to find alternatives, but they're going to have a hard time, right?
Yeah, the last number I heard was that HP sold something like 40% of all Dell, or not Dell. I can't even get all these damn names. So yeah. HP sold 40% of Dell hardware. No, HP sold something like 40% of VMware licensing globally. That's a big
huge.
Chunk.
That's
you know,
huge.
Yeah. That might be a couple years old, but that's the last number I heard, and I'm sure somebody can clarify it. But
so going forward,
VMware has to stay independent.
I know this. They're not independent, though. That's the point. And
right
HP
now,
is
I think
say,
the perception
we
is
will
that-
find alternatives. Right? That is that discussion has been going on for a while inside HP. You know, and they've had a little bit of practice at this. It hasn't been perfect, but you know, they've had partners, you know, turn on them before. You look at Microsoft. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, who's the winner in all this right now? And with all this uncertainty, Microsoft gets to step up the game and say, hey. We sell a hypervisor, we sell cloud stuff, we sell all kinds of things, and you know, we don't have to be beholden to one platform over the other. You can, you know, come partner with us. I think that they have an opportunity to step in here and do some really interesting partnerships and disruption themselves.
Yeah, but they have to be aware of this deal, right? And it's not clear to me that they actually have the industry awareness to do it because they gaze at their own navel so hard all the time, right? They don't really fund Hyper-V development very much, right? They're so focused on cloud right now. Is there anything going on with Hyper-V? You know, the fact that it's free means that they don't have any revenue for it, so it doesn't get the kind of development that it deserves.
Yeah, right? But right. now now with HP reselling VMware, and that money that goes back to VMware eventually goes back to Dell, one of their biggest competitors, right? Surely HP are now going to be knocking on Redmond's door saying, come on, we'd love to sell more Hyper-V and more around the Hyper-V ecosystem so that we're not funding our biggest rival, right?
I think HP would look for integrating their own hypervisors from, you know, open source.
Really?
Tech, yeah.
Hmm.
Well, they'll work with Microsoft. Don't get me wrong. They'll work with Microsoft, but, you know, KVM looks going to look a lot better and everything else.
What about the sheer speculation? What about HP picking up somebody like Nutanix then as a knee-jerk reaction to this? Because they've got they're starting their own play in the hypervisor space, aren't they? Okay.
No.
The hypervisor technology's out there.
Yeah. A couple of dead easy questions. Equalogic and Compellent, then, do they get put out to pasture?
Dead.
Okay. All right.
You cannot spend this kind of money. I mean, it'll take a while, but it's dead. You know, you can't dig yourself a hole this deep and then say, we're going to sell these other guys that compete with it.
I remember when we've talked about, you know, potentially HP and EMC merging, and there was always the question, whose storage portfolio would win? I think we all thought it was going to be EMC anyway. Well, the Dell storage portfolio stands no chance, right? That's a goner.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and you look at the HP and Compaq merger, right?
Uh-huh.
It's a very, very interesting thing. And,
wait, you know, a lot of people are comparing this to.
Yeah, but there's a lot of differences, certainly a lot of differences there.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about two full systems companies. EMC, I don't think you can really say is a full systems company, although they've been certainly doing a lot to, you know, position themselves that way.
Mm-hmm. You know what? One of the great things about EMC over the past 5 or 6 years is they have made some astute acquisitions, and that's almost kept their storage business, I think, at the forefront of the storage market, right? But now that they're going to be owned by Dell and they've got all this massive debt to service, that's going to, surely they won't be going out and making more purchases in the future.
That is such a cool point that you make, or a great point. I don't know if saying cool is the right thing, right? But all startups that are looking for EMC to acquire them on one way or another, that's not happening, right?
Or Dell.
You know, so you look at this flash space that we're all a part of, right? And all these small flash companies that are out there, and you know, whether you're talking about SolidFire, Tegile, Caminario, you know, Nimble's already public, Pure is public, but there's a lot of other companies. You know, is EMC going to buy us? No. There's no acquisition from EMC. There's no exit from EMC. No exit from Dell.
And do we think then what they've got is the portfolio now of all the different products? That is going to be it for the next few years now. We shouldn't expect to see acquisitions. Because that's the challenging thing, isn't it? These big enterprises, these big companies tend to struggle to innovate, and they rely so heavily on other startups being ahead of the curve and then buying them. You're not going to be able to afford that now, I would surely expect.
Yeah, and there's going to be cuts all over the place, right? It's going to be very, very
hard.
They're
going to hurt.
You know, you look at how much has Dell innovated, you know, in the last couple of years since they went private.
Yeah, zero.
You know, they haven't. You know, it's going to be the same thing. There's going to be no innovation behind this because they're going to have to service that debt.
Man, huge ramifications just across the whole industry, really.
It is. It's huge. I mean, if you look at the macro picture, right? If you were to look at this from a 100-year scope, this is the signal where technology is maturing. This is the flag that everybody will look at and say, this is where the technology industry turned a corner and went from maturing, like at some point the automobile industry did. You know, we're not in that huge expansion phase anymore. We're going to be consolidating, and that's the way it's going to go. And this is the defining moment for that change in the industry.
It's definitely crazy times.
It is.
So we should all be sharpening our resumes, looking for someplace else to go. Because in
heck, no, dude, there's a ton of opportunity out there with this even happening. You know, and like I said, I think, you know, I mean, if my DMs today are any indication, there's going to be a lot of people that are really, you know, you're going to get a lot of people who don't want to go work for Dell, and vice versa, don't want to work with EMC people. There's, I mean,
why would they not want to work for Dell? You loved it there, Mark.
What's my line? No comment.
Yeah.
The checks have not stopped clearing.
They have.
Yeah. You can sleep better at night though now, Mark, because there's no way that Tejai will get picked up by Dell. You're not going to end up there anymore.
Well, you know, and that's the other thing. There's a bunch of these storage companies out here now, and you know, we all know it's like, all right, well, who's left to buy anybody? HP and Cisco.
Maybe Cisco do need to make that big storage purchase. We know the whole thing with what were they called, Whiptail. That didn't work.
And we've said it's because they didn't take storage seriously. They shoved it under the data center group who didn't know anything about storage and brought some people in but never really enabled it. Plus, it was a crap product.
Cisco doesn't have storage DNA, do they?
And because they need to create an independent storage organization that's on the same par or same level as Route Switch and data center group for computing.
Agree. Right, but
and the only way they do that, they pick up NetApp, and then they get all of that in one spot, right? But then they get NetApp. It's like, you know, you got the, you know, in the prom, and you did not get the homecoming queen, right? So, you know, you got her her fugly sister.
Do we think there's a better chance? Or sorry, a bigger chance? No, that's all right, yeah. You think there's a bigger chance that Cisco may make a large storage acquisition?
Honestly, it's really tough to say because, I mean, I think you could look at it from a couple ways. It's like, all right, do they pick up a hodgepodge of smaller software-based companies that don't have the legacy baggage associated with them and then slowly build that business and then – or do they have to make a big acquisition now and hit the ground running right away in order to take advantage of – I mean, because both – you know, let's say buy NetApp, right? Big company. They're going to have to do all the due diligence. They're going to have to go through the same problems and challenges that EMC is having and Dell and EMC have. Or do they go out and buy a handful of smaller companies and formulate a storage strategy around those and have differentiation? Or do they just sit back and still partner with everybody under the sun and not worry about it?
They'd probably do the latter, I think. But if they did pick up NetApp, they would automatically get that storage DNA and they'd get, you know, that would give them a better chance.
They would get the third pillar, right? And they would have a very strong pillar with a very, very large install base. And already, you know, already synergies there between, you know, you got the flex pods and all of the work, you know, tons of reference architectures and software integration and all these different pieces. I mean, I think anybody can make the case for Cisco picking up NetApp and having a fairly good story, or even buying what's left of IBM storage assets, which aren't crap. You know, they just don't push the same way that the other single focus storage. I mean, NetApp is essentially the last of the large storage vendors now.
Yeah, the problem with doing that though is they take on all of the costs and overhead of that right? Yeah. So you know they have to be looking at, you take on a small company like our companies. I haven't mentioned Tintri yet today. I need to do that. So people from Tintri say, you know, I'm not being unfair to them, right? And well, it happens. It happens.
Really?
You know? Well, yeah. You know, you saw this. You know, Nick Dyer from. Nick
oh,
Dyer,
yeah.
You know, from Nimble. It was like he thought we were, you know, like shafting him or something. It's like, no, we don't use this show to promote ourselves, right? So yes, I mentioned Tintri. I mentioned Nimble several times here, whatever. Like, I even mentioned Pure, you know, for you guys at Pure, you know, Cominaria. Hey, Cominaria guys, you know, we're being good to you too. I know there's people we're forgetting. But, you know, when you take on NetApp, you're taking in all of that overhead, right? And I think, you know, and I think if you're Cisco, you're probably thinking, is that what we want? Do we want that? They certainly have enough cash to burn. They could.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big thing. That's why we're doing this special edition, because it really is. I think it's the biggest deal that we're likely to see in our lifetimes in tech.
It's end times.
We're going to wake up in the morning and it's just going to have been a dream. What?
Oh, nightmare.
Acquisition hangover.
Oh, it is going to be a nightmare for those people involved in it, though, for the next 2 to 3 years. Good luck with that.
It's definitely going to be tough. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not like this has never happened before, just not necessarily at the scale. You know, I wish them all the best of luck. You know, it's a tough business, and, you know, it is so – I struggled mightily with how this would happen to begin with, because initially my initial pressure was like my knee-jerk reaction was, good God, no, why in the hell would you do this? Right, but the more I start to read and absorb other opinions and see some of the dynamics behind it, I'm like, I could come around to seeing this as, you know, I can see why they did it. I personally wouldn't have gone this route if I was Dell.
I'm the opposite way around. I was kind of like, oh, wow, this is interesting. And the more and more I read about it, I'm like, Why? No. I'm the opposite.
Well, you know, and you compare it to other things that are going on in the industry, right? And are these people stupid? Are these people smart or what? So look at what HP is doing. HP is breaking apart their PC business from their infrastructure business. And now it looks like Dell has taken on a huge amount of debt to put all these things together. At some point, is Dell going to separate that and say our PC business actually isn't part of our infrastructure business or what? Is Dell smarter than HP? Is HP smarter than Dell? Or are they both just freaking dumb?
Right. Right.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would look at this and say, yeah, they're both pretty freaking dumb.
Well.
And on that note.